Welcome to Holden Village. In the fireside room, Susan Sherwin will be speaking on Fanning the Creative Spark to Flame, Christian Spirituality and Creativity. So let's listen in on Susan.
I'm a musician and a writer and a thinker and a baker of bread and a lover of rocks. And I'm not an expert on anything. But I'm a seeker, and when I'm interested in something and I am passionate about it, I do a lot of research to find out more about it. And I've always been very interested in the creative process. I did my master's degree at Mundelein College, which is now absorbed into Loyola University, and was able to participate in a very experiential, innovative program, a Master of Liberal Studies, and I did my work in arts and spirituality, especially as those two things come together in the liturgy. The name of this session is Fanning the Spark into Flame, Christian Spirituality and Creativity. I did a session on Thursday called Dancing Naked, also on Christian spirituality and creativity. But in that session, I talked more about how I think it is simply a part of our vocation and our essence as people of God to be creative. Because if we are made in God's image and God is creative, then we are also intrinsically creative people. Also, I think it's important for us to create things in this world, beautiful things, innovative things, compassionate things, because God is not just a God of the intellect, and we are not just intellects, we are bodies and emotions. And God's primary revelation to us was a concrete living being in the flesh, the incarnation, literally in the flesh, Jesus. And so, through that act, I believe God affirmed matter, the very substance of things, and blessed it and said, yes, this is very good. And in participating in a creative act, we are participating in doing something with this very good stuff. Rocks, bread, city planning, other people. I also brought up how Jesus always operated in a very concrete way with people. He spoke stories to them. He touched them. He used his spit on them. He used clay, the hem of his garment. Very concrete things. And the church, although it has forgotten some things, has continued this with candles, incense, wine, bread, water, oil. Very concrete things. The very good of creation carried on in us now as God's people in the world. In tonight's session, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the creative process itself and give us all perhaps some ideas of how to fan that spark inside of us, because it is inside everybody. And once we find that particular area that we are passionate about, and that we might have a particular gift for, if we fan that flame, then the creativity will spill over. If you've ever seen any of the wildfires out here in the forests, there's no containing it. Once that you have fanned that spark into flame, it will go over into all parts of your life. Now, some psychologists would dispute that. They'd say, oh, a person is only creative in one area. But I don't believe that. Everything that I've seen from the people that I've worked with and studied with and made music with has shown me that once you open up that creative door in yourself, or a floodgate, and bring it into the area that you're most passionate about or most gifted in, it will flow over into other areas of your life as well. There's an interesting thing about creativity, and that is that it's catching. When you're around a person who always has good ideas, you start to feel like, you know, this would be really fun. I'd like to have a lot of these good ideas too. And so maybe you start borrowing a few ideas that you see from that so-called creative person as if you weren't. You start borrowing ideas, and then there's a little rumbling deep inside, and you start to have your own ideas. Creativity is like love. There's no depleting it. You can dip out of creativity over and over, and there's always going to be an abundance. And that's not just for the individual, but that's for the whole community. And as individuals in a community, we have a responsibility to embody as much as possible those beautiful new ideas that we have, bring them to some kind of fruition. It won't always be something that society calls high art. We make a big mistake when we think that it has to be a Rodin sculpture to be something creative and beautiful. If you were in my other session, I apologize, I'm going to tell the same story again. My sister looks at me because I'm a musician and she says, "Susan, you got all the talent in the family." Well, that's just utterly hogwash, because my sister makes the most beautiful handwork, needlework, embroidery, needlepoint, and she's a healer. She's a healer. She deals with sick and ailing and troubled people all the time and has a gift for healing as a nurse. And although I've tried to explain to her that my gift, because it's something that society holds up as a talent, something that we hold up as an art, it is no bigger than the creativity and the talent that she has in making beautiful things out of thread and cloth with her hands, and the beautiful things that she does for people by touching them and healing them. So don't ever think just because you're a baker of bread and not a symphony conductor that you're not talented and not creative. Every person has that spark in them. Everybody does. I don't doubt that, and nobody can change my mind about that. Everybody has that spark of creativity. You have the job of finding out what you're most passionate about, what gives you the most joy, what you have a special affinity for. Find that, and then bring that gift to the community. There's a story I like to tell just to illustrate this a little bit. In the last years when things were good for the Teton Sioux, Black Elk, when he was a young boy, had a vision, a very powerful and broad vision for his people, and he didn't tell anybody about it. He kept it inside, he didn't tell anybody about it for years. But he became increasingly haunted at night by nightmares and night fears until he finally went to Black Road, the holy man, and told him about his vision. And Black Road said to him, "For a man who has had a vision, you do not get the power of the vision until you enact it for the people to see." And creativity is that same type of enacting your vision for the people to see. It's a gift to the whole community. It is not just a personal thing. Even if you write a poem and put it in your personal journal and have expressed something, there's a transformation that takes place that will be a gift for the community. But there are all sorts of different ways. There was a land developer in here the other day. He said, "How do I fit into creativity?" And of course, land developing can be a creative act. We often see it as a destructive act. But creativity is about turning around and turning upside down expectations. Totally, for the moment, setting aside any preconceptions about the way things should be. And in that void is where the spark begins to get enough oxygen to flame up. Otherwise, with all those other ideas and preconceptions, beliefs, it's all kind of smothered. There's a Zen story about a young disciple who visits a Zen master, and the Zen master offers him tea. And the disciple says, I've come to you for enlightenment, and I would like you to teach me. And so the Zen master began to pour a cup of tea for him. And the young disciple held his cup, and it got higher and higher in the cup. And finally it was flowing over the sides. And not wanting to be impolite, but he finally exclaimed, it's too full, it can't hold anymore. And the master said, and so are you, too full of your own beliefs and ideas. And if you wish enlightenment, you need to rid yourself, empty yourself of those ideas. Creativity is dangerous and frightening at times because it means letting go of things that we're often attached to, that often seem precious to us. That's why it's a risky business. But it's a business that I believe as Christians, as people made in God's image, that we're all called to. Because that's the only way that things are going to change, is to set aside what we think is true. We may come back to the same idea eventually. But on the other hand, maybe the inspiration of the energy that suffuses the whole universe will teach us something new and better for ourselves and for a community. There's another aspect of creativity which is so beneficial for us. When you are involved in creative activity, you can't be any place but here, and you can't be any time but now. When Jesus was talking to people in the gospel accounts, I often think that he was telling them, start living in this present moment. Stop looking for a kingdom that is somewhere in some distant future. It's here. Live in this moment because it's the only moment that we have. The past is already lost to us. The future is not yet. Live in this moment. And when you're involved in a creative activity, you cannot be anywhere but in this present moment. A part of that sense of now is cultivated by becoming aware. We're not always aware of what's going on around us. We're not always aware of what's going on in other people around us. There's revelation all around us all the time, but we need to cultivate our ability to be aware of it, and that awareness only happens in now. For example, anybody, I'm not going to judge anybody, there are no right or wrong answers, but anybody, what did you notice on your way down to Koinonia, on your way here to this session?
Frisbee players in the street.
All right, okay. Other things?
A deer down the road.
A deer, okay. Others? Were there any other animals? Yes.
Clouds passing over a mountain.
Okay. Not dropping rain this time.
Unclaimed boxes on the dock.
All right. Other things that you noticed?
Flowers around.
Flowers. Can you name any of them?
I just remember seeing some white ones and some more blue ones. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. You got the colors. Good. Other things that you noticed? Okay, well, I didn't notice a thing when I was running down here because I was so preoccupied with what I was going to be doing in this session. I did not notice a thing, except for I caught a glimpse of a green and white plaid shirt out of the corner of my eye, and I knew I had to give some information to my husband. And that was about it. That was it. I was so preoccupied. Had I really been living in that moment and not living in the future, which was not yet, and it didn't help me, if I had been living in that moment, I would have noticed the daisies and the iris and the children playing frisbee. I'm glad you told me they were playing frisbee out there because I didn't even notice them. Okay? Another question, and you don't have to answer this now, but you can take it along with you. When you walk the upper trail or the lower trail to 10 Mile Falls, how many shades of green do you see? Have you ever taken a walk and just looked at the shadows and the shapes of the shadows? These are important things to do to live in the now moment, but they have another effect as well. Because our left brain, which is the place where language resides, what color should I make the brain? Blue? The left brain is where language resides. It's very sequential. It's very time-oriented. It's temporal, logic, rational. What are some other things I could say? Deductive. These are all characteristics of the left side. And the left side always wants to judge things and name things. So I might be walking down here and just say, oh, the hotel. Oh, here's Koinonia. And not notice the shadows, the smells, the crunch of the gravel, the colors of the flowers. Because I'm so busy naming things. Because my natural tendency is for this left part of the brain to rule the roost. Whereas the right part of the brain is more interested in shapes, patterns, space, spatial relationships. It's where, now I don't want to oversimplify it because it is oversimplifying how the two parts of the brain function. They're not opposites totally, they just process information differently. They might both get the same information and just process it differently. Music and mathematics come more out of the right side of the brain. Language comes more out of the left side. And this is a little thing called the corpus callosum, and I'll talk about that a little later because that's the bridge between the two sides of the brain, for them to be in conversation with each other. What happens when we start noticing shadows or shapes, or instead of looking at the branches of a tree, look at the shapes that are created between the branches? I don't know if any of you have ever done calligraphy, but one of the things that you're taught when you're doing calligraphy is to stop looking at the letter so much and look at the space between the letters that you're forming. It's very difficult for somebody like me because my left brain wants to just be concentrating on getting that straight and getting the angle right and looking at the black line that I'm producing instead of the space between the letters. That is a right brain function. And when we're at our highest level of creativity, both of these halves of our brain are in conversation with each other. They need to be. You need the two to be creative. Because although the right brain might have a great idea, the left brain has to think of the steps that you need to go through to produce that idea. Whereas the right brain might have a picture of what you want to create out of clay, it's the left brain that will be able to put that into language and help you speak it. They need to be in conversation with each other. When they are working equally, which is called old brain symmetry or bilateralism or lateral thinking, the brain often will go into theta wave pattern. Our brains are constantly working with electrical impulses, sending messages from up to 3 to 200 miles an hour to different parts of our brain. And when we're normally walking around during the day, our brain electricity is oscillating at, I think it's about 14 to 20 cycles per second. That's the beta. And then you get into alpha, which is meditation, a level where you can meditate and pray, and that's about 8 to 13 cycles per second. When we're at our most creative is when our brain slows down to 4 to 7 cycles per second, called theta waves. One of the ways we can do that is by praying and meditating before we start a creative project. One of the ways that we can do that is by listening to music, which brings our brain into that level of brainwave activity. And there are composers who compose music specifically for that. A lot of it is called New Age music. And that lumps everything so much together. But it's music that is specifically designed for creativity and healing. Because that's the other thing that happens when both sides of the brain are functioning equally, working together equally, and the brain goes into theta waves. It raises the efficiency of the body's immune system. So there's another advantage here. You're healthier because it stimulates the immune system when both sides are in conversation and the brain goes into theta waves. If you have questions and observations as I go along, please just come on in, and I can usually find my way back to where I was going, and if I can't, maybe we'll end up in a better place anyway. George Eliot said, "If we had a keen vision of all of ordinary human life, it would be like hearing the grass grow or a squirrel's heartbeat. And we should die of the roar which lies on the other side of silence. As it is, the quickest of us walk about well wadded with stupidity." And that's how I often am. I was well wadded with stupidity when I walked down the hill just a while ago to come to this class. So sometime, just for yourself, you don't have to tell anybody else, just take a walk to look for a certain color. Or take a walk just to notice the shape in between branches. Notice the shadows and their shape and their color. I never knew until I really sat down and looked for the first time that the shadows in winter are not black. They're lavender in Minnesota. The shadows are lavender. And if I were an artist who was going to paint a watercolor, I would want to notice that the shadows are lavender. My left brain wants to say, oh, just paint it black. But if I really see and am aware, I'll see that they are not black. Well, this all sounds kind of goofy. But it's all a matter of slipping out of what we have been taught as what is the normal way of thinking and seeing and being. We've been taught to always be judging things. Is this the best way to be doing this? Well, that's a voice that needs to be shut off during the creative process. When the whole thing is done, then you can decide whether it's worth keeping or if you want to try again. But in the middle of the process, that's a voice that you want to keep silent. What does twilight smell like at Holden Village? I suppose it depends on whether you're up by the compost bins or whether you're out on one of the trails where the smell of the evergreens is so heady. There was a spot that we got to... we were walking over on Bainbridge Island off of Seattle just before we came here a few days, and Jeremiah suddenly stopped. He's our older son. He stopped and he said, oh, smell. This is just like Holden. It smells like Holden right here. So we all stopped and took a deep breath, and it did. It had that same old pine needle smell and new pine needle smell that you get when you're out on some of the trails. Another exercise to do to heighten that sense of awareness where we are right now here is to listen differently. And I'm going to ask us all to be quiet for a moment and listen. Listen to the sounds close to us first, and then move outward and listen for other sounds and see how many different sounds you can hear. And maybe if you want to close your eyes while you do that, I'll just give us about 15 seconds to listen.
The Mall Creek.
Yes. That creek. The wall creaking. Other things, yes.
And hear children playing in the distance.
Children playing in the distance.
I can hear my stomach move.
Oh, didn't that salad stick with you?
Oh, dear.
Other
sounds like it could be that, too.
The quickest way to get into the now moment is to use your senses. As our bodies are in this moment, it's our minds that keep flitting away into the past or into the future. The quickest way to get into this moment, which is the moment where you can be creative, is to use your senses. Listen, smell, hear, touch, notice.
I have a question.
Yes.
This is probably just the right brain, left brain thing that you're talking about. You have to alternate sometimes, or they have to work out a partnership. But once you've gotten something, a kernel of something to be creative with, you know, you've had your time of awareness and you've been noticing things.
Mm-hmm.
There's some connection that you make, and you say, oh, okay, I want to go somewhere with this now. When you actually have to fill in, you know, do the steps, sit down and write the story, mm-hmm. or draw the picture, or write the song, then the very things that were in the here and now can actually be a distraction. And you're trying to think, no, I got, you know, you gotta do the thing now, and then you kind of have to, you change gears a little bit.
Yeah. Well, whenever I have a creative project that I have to do, that's always the time where I feel an overwhelming need to clean my kitchen cupboards. When I have a hymn text that needs to be written, then by gosh, that laundry really needs to be done. Part of that is it, there is a certain mind set that you need to attain to actually do the embodiment part of the creative act. Part of it is also that we are always setting up obstacles for ourselves. And something that isn't really a disturbance, we might be telling ourselves is a disturbance, just because maybe the process isn't moving along very smoothly. Roughly, the creative process looks like this. Input, preparation. That's the main part, really. That's the where all the work is done. A hymn text. The input preparation is where I look through the scriptures and find every reference to what I want to write the hymn text about. And then I start looking in concordances and commentaries, trying to find out the original meanings of the words so that I'm not putting something in that is not true. Then I have to decide, perhaps, one particular image that I want to focus on. And I will just start writing and writing and writing all kinds of things all over the sheet. Nobody else could decipher it but me. Then I hit the point where it's going nowhere. No matter how long I sit at the desk, no matter how much peace and quiet I get, I hit this wall where I cannot get any farther with this project. Often, what happens here Often the underlying reason is because we've been trying to rationally, with our left brain, construct something. And the left brain by itself cannot do a creative act. And so we get to the point where I just throw my pen on the table and say, I am going to go clean those cupboards. Or my son Benjamin, when he was little, he was really good at throwing blocks across the room when he couldn't get them just the way he wanted them. It's a necessary and important part of the creative process. Because the left brain won't quit trying to dominate until it's presented with a task that it can't accomplish. And when the left brain finally gets so frustrated that you want to quit, go ahead and quit. Lay it aside. Set aside. Go do something else. Take a hike, take a bath, do the laundry, clean the cupboards, do some activity that is not a brain activity. It was Thomas Edison who used to take naps for his creativity. He'd put a ball bearing in each hand and a tin plate under each hand. He'd sit in the chair until he fell asleep. And then when he fell asleep enough that his hands would open and the ball bearings would drop down into the tin pans and wake him up, that's where he got a lot of his best ideas, when he wasn't trying to consciously strain and grind with his left brain, which alone cannot do a creative act. Incubation is a necessary part of this. I'm sure that you all have had situations where you've been trying to work out a problem or trying to find the exact right sentence that you want in something you're writing, or trying to figure out how to deal with a troubling matter that has come up in a relationship. And no matter how much you struggle with it, you don't find the answer. And so finally you go out and you go swimming, or you're dusting the living room, or mowing the lawn, and then all of a sudden, the idea comes. It may be later that day. It may be 2 years later, but it's breakthrough. You finally get the solution. And it's because you have relaxed enough and put things aside enough that the right brain can begin to converse with the left brain and say, oh, by the way, I have this idea. And then it needs to be put into form, manifestation, embodiment. I'm sure there are other synonyms for it. One of the things that's so interesting to me about the creative process is that, do you know Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, the archetypal hero's journey? Let me use the Christ journey instead. Input, preparation. You can help me out with this. Probably it's baptism, time in the wilderness, his ministry. And then frustration would be the
temptations. The temptations, possibly.
Possibly, that would be a mini one. Then you get into the absolute discord among the Jewish elders, and then the arrest. Oh, that's a good spelling. Arrest. Trial, crucifixion, incubation, 3 days in the tomb, breakthrough, resurrection. And see, it wasn't enough for Christ to rise. Then what did he do? He appeared. He appeared to everyone. The appearances. He brought the message back. He brought his experience back. So the whole creative process is like a small Christ journey. And that's also the archetypal hero's journey. I'm going to talk about this next week in my class, but Joseph Campbell says that most of the great stories, the truth stories, the mythic stories, which are truer on the inside than they are on the outside, have this basic form that the hero receives a call, accepts the call, is given allies, crosses the threshold to the unknown, meets trials, perhaps even death. He calls this the belly of the whale. Remember Jonah? Triumphs, crosses back over the threshold. He does it as a circle, which is much better. Here's the threshold. So we would be about here. Crosses the threshold and then brings back a boon for the rest of the universe. It's the same process that you go through in the creative process. Because you receive a call, you accept it, you do the work that you need to do, you are frustrated, there are trials, then there's a long time of incubation, perhaps a death of previous ideas, perhaps a death of previous preconceptions, then the aha moment, and then the embodiment. I think that this is one of the primal processes in the universe, because you see the same process in particle physics, broken down more simply, symmetry, chaos, new symmetry. You also see it in, let's say, the developing human fetus. I mean, there's a long time of gestation. There's a death to what the cells were before, and the gestation coming to birth of a new thing. It's the creative process, and we all participate in it. When we become aware, in fact, I'm sorry, I need to interrupt. I don't have a watch, and so when it gets to be about 5 after, need somebody to make some kind of a sign to me if you're wearing a watch. When we become aware, we are led into a different consciousness in our everyday life that is not just for creativity, it is for everything. I think of, and I don't know how to pronounce his name, the Buddhist Thich Nhat Hanh.
Thich Nhat Hanh.
Tell me.
Thich Nhat Hanh.
Thich Nhat Hanh, okay. And his wonderful book, The Miracle of Mindfulness, talks about living in the present moment. And he gives the example of sitting down with a friend, they're eating an orange. And the friend is eating the orange so fast that he doesn't even notice that he's eating the orange. And he picks up another one and starts to peel it. And he speaks to him and says, "Do you realize that you didn't even taste the first orange that you ate, because you were thinking of something completely different while you ate the orange?" It also gives us a completely different appreciation for the things around us if we are aware of them and savor them. I hate doing dishes. Our dishwasher probably saved our marriage many years ago. And one of the things that Thich Nhat Hanh says is when you're doing the dishes, don't be thinking about what your lecture is going to be tomorrow, and don't be thinking about what that woman in the grocery store said to you yesterday, but wash the dishes. Feel the way the suds feel on your fingers, and feel the sensation of the plate underneath your skin. And feel the steam rising up and clinging to your face. He said, that's the moment that we need to live in, because it's the moment that's given to us, the now moment. And we're so often somewhere else that that moment is lost to us. One of the things that happens when you're engaged in a creative process is that you become almost at one with the thing that you're working on. I suppose if we would talk to the potters who work down in the pot shop, they would tell us about that, how they don't have an awareness of anything other than the pot that they're working on. In this book, which is a really delightful book that was written as a companion to the PBS series on the creative spirit, they tell the story of a neurosurgeon who just becomes so involved in the surgery that he's doing that at the end of an operation, he turned around and noticed that there was this great pile of stuff in the corner. And he asked the nurse what it was, and she said, well, the corner of the ceiling caved in while you were operating, and that's all the rubble on the floor. And he hadn't even noticed. That's really living in the present moment. And it's valuable, not just for creativity, but for us as living human beings. Annie Dillard says that what we need to do is amass in long lines like tribes people from Africa and shake gourds at each other to wake each other up so that we notice what's going on. I love that image. She says instead we watch television and miss the real show. And that's really what television does. It pulls us out of the present moment. Betty Edwards, have any of you ever seen the book Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain? You have. It's a delightful book. And when I was doing a research project on creativity, I got that book. And as a part of the project, I did her exercises for drawing as I went along. And it's just a wonderful thing to do. If you don't think that you're an artist, just set that aside and try her exercises. Because she has developed a series of drawing exercises that bring you into what she calls the R mode for right side of the brain. One of the exercises that she does is to just crumple up a piece of paper and set it in front of you, and then take a pencil and a piece of paper in your lap and don't look at the paper you're drawing on, and just follow the contours of the crinkled paper with your eyes and make the same movement with your pencil. And it's just amazing what turns out. It's just amazing. You can do the same thing with your hand. That's one of her exercises. Or something interesting, like, I never knew how beautiful a red cabbage is when you cut it horizontally. Oh, it's just a gorgeous pattern of purple and white. And that's one of her exercises, is to choose a vegetable or a fruit like that and slice it and draw it, following the contours. Frederick Frank, who is a mystic artist, calls it seeing drawing. And it will bring your mind into that type of activity where the bright brain finally gets to participate. One of the other things that she has you do is to take a drawing by perhaps a well-known artist and turn it upside down. And I'll show you what happens when you do that. This is a drawing of Stravinsky by Picasso. And it's her exercise from the book. When you turn it upside down, you are just following shapes. You just say, okay, this line's about this far from this line. This has a curve like this. And you just go through doing the drawing like that. and this is the one that I did. And I have not had any great training or anything as an art major. That's not been the area of my training. Because it was upside down and I couldn't name it and say, oh, that's the arm. Oh, that's the crease at the knee in his pants. Because I couldn't name it because it was upside down, I actually drew what was there. That's her whole point in her book, is that when we can't name things, when we get into the place where our right brain is seeing, we begin to put down what's actually there instead of what we think. Because when we're children, we stop looking at things. We draw birds like this after a while. We just put them near us. We put a bunch of birds like this up in the sky. And that's a symbol for a bird, but it's not what birds look like. And so we have to train ourselves to see again what the birds really look like, what a flower really looks like. I had my godson, his kindergarten teacher, told him that tulips are red and dogs are brown. And he was doing purple dogs and green tulips, and now he does brown dogs and red tulips. And that was squashed in him because somebody was telling him that he couldn't imagine things and put them down the way he saw them. Something that we should never do to children. Don't be a surveillance team. Don't hover over them. Don't tell them what's right and way wrong as far as how to use a toy. Jeremiah and Benjamin come up with much more interesting ways to use toys than the original inventors often did. And I have to resist the temptation to show them the right way to use that toy. You become almost one with what you're doing because you're so much in the present moment.
It's not anger.
Thanks.
I'm sorry for
everything. There's a beautiful poem that comes out of the... I'd have to look here to see. I'm assuming that it's from Japan. That describes just this same type of thing. Oh, great. I didn't put who wrote it, just what book it came from. I have been gazing at the scenery of Sho and Shung. I realize I am all of a sudden a part of the landscape. That's the feeling that we get when we're involved in the creative process. Work with a piece of clay sometime, or that strange white stuff that you can put posters up on the wall with. A friend of ours keeps a glob of that in his desk and plays with it. Work with that and come up with interesting shapes, and then squash it and start over again. Don't build a booth. Just try again. Ask yourself what-if questions. What if what we call the North Pole is really the bottom of the Earth? Then how do our perceptions about things change? Think of I wonder questions like, I wonder, since Helen Keller was blind and deaf, what shape did her thoughts take? The what if exercise and the I wonder exercise are two of the best things you can do for yourself, and you can be doing it while you're brushing your teeth. And that's another thing we can do for ourselves. Do you always brush your teeth before you get in the shower in the morning, or do you use the toilet first, and do you put on your mascara before you put on something else if you're a woman? Change that. Do you always step onto the steps with your right foot first? Change that. Because changing those habits will also change the way our brain is perceiving things. It will bring you into a brighter awareness of your body and how things are going, what's around you. I always almost fall on my face when I try to step with my left foot first up a step. I feel like my whole world has just suddenly changed. And it's so simple. Try altering your routines and your habits to increase your creativity. try to think of all the uses that you can for some little object that you find in your home or your room. All the uses that you can think of for a paperclip, other than holding two pieces of paper together, or all the uses that you can think for a popsicle stick or a brick or anything like that. Everything that you do like that will begin to get all of those neurons in your brain clicking and connecting and making it easier the next time you want to approach some type of a creative solution. The Zen do this wonderfully, trying to circumvent that left brain that wants to dominate so much with their koans. What is the sound of one hand clapping? That's the most famous one. Questions that the left brain cannot rationally answer opens up the gateway into the right brain so that they can both be functioning. What did your face look like? Yes.
Sorry. That's okay. We had a great what if question here a few weeks ago. What if mosquitoes sucked fat instead of blood?
Oh, hey. Yes, then I suppose I wouldn't swat them quite as readily. What did your face look like before you were conceived? Questions that your left brain can't deal with. Also, just relaxing. Doing a bit of meditation, deep breathing, breathing all the way down into your belly, breathing all the way out, noticing the pauses in between taking in the breath and letting the breath out, and between letting the breath out and breathing in again. It's a bodily awareness that can do nothing but healthy things for you. First of all, it calms the body and it lowers the heart, the pulse and the blood pressure. But it also brings you into that state where you can begin to tap in to the creativity that each of us has inside of us as a part of being God's children. Yes?
Just a comment on the gestation period.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a stereotype about artists, but there's some truth in it. You see artists fooling around, and I think the act of playing, of being playful, of getting out of the left brain is a real important part of being creative, of being physical, and whether it's shooting baskets or whether it's really running around and fooling around and playing with clay, mm-hmm. or anything that is not a left brain activity, because you really can't solve your creative come to your creative solution with the left brain, like you were saying earlier. Mm-hmm. And so to be in your body, to move, to dance, to get out of your head, whatever it is a real important step, I think.
Right. And plus, if we have humor and a bit of lightness about what we're doing, we will quiet that voice somewhat, which says in us, well, what if you fail? Or what if this isn't the right answer? If you have a bit of lightness and humor about it, it's easier to go about the task, because then it's easier to fail and move on again. Because often we do fail.
Yeah. And it isn't. I don't think it's so much about the quality, it's the quantity. You know, if you show up at the page, the quality takes care of itself eventually. That's not why you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the creative process is, well, I just think that that's an important piece of it.
Yes, yeah. You're right, it is. So, go out and be creative and notice the colors and the sounds and the tastes. And whatever you have a passion for, whatever your talent or gift is, it will overflow into the other parts of your life, whether you're a social planner or a bread baker or a gardener or a street sweeper. There's always room for that creative moment that moves us farther into the beauty of God. And I thank you for coming.